It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Halloween is the second biggest holiday after Christmas. Here to give us a little history about All Hallows Eve and how it's been celebrated in the Steel City is our pop culture contributor, Joe Wose. Joe, welcome back to the program. How are you?
Good. Nice to be here.
Where did the concept of Halloween begin? It goes way back, doesn't it?
It goes way, way back. It is actually an ancient Celtic tradition, Samhain, which was a summer's end celebration. And when we think of fall, not just as at a time of, you know, harvest, that's also a time of, you know, death. Plants around us are dying, and this became this celebration of the spirits, of rising up after death. And so they would dress up as what we would call ghosts, these spirits. And so that was the origins of it. We also pulled certain things from the Roman festival celebrating the dead as well. But it has these very ancient traditions, and a lot of the things remain from that period. It slowly, as many things do, became adopted and adapted and taken over by the Catholic Church. And that's really where our modern Halloween sort of begins.
And as Halloween was adapted to modern Western society, did anybody resist it? Did anybody say, you know, why are we celebrating this?
Well, you had in the early times, this is in 601, Pope Gregory actually moved Hallows Eve, which is what we often associate with Halloween. He moved it from May to November 1st. Specifically because they were making these inroads in Ireland and they wanted to sort of take their holiday that was celebrated and take out those, you know, pagan traditions and turn them into Catholic tradition. Same thing that they did with Christmas in many cases. So the resistance to it, this idea, was always there. They wanted to sort of convert all those pagan religions over, all those pagan ideas, and there was resistance to some of them. Especially any of the ones that were associated with sort of a Satanism. You know, there was a lot of fear associated with those things.
So how did trick-or-treating originate?
You know, trick-or-treating sort of started out as you had all these immigrants coming over from Ireland and Europe to the United States. And there were these traditions existing already of people going in Europe to door-to-door. The poor people would dress up. And this is, you know, on Hallows Eve, and they would go begging from door to door for food or money in exchange for songs and prayers. This was called souling. And they would hand out something called a soul cake, which was a little sweet cake with a cross on top of it. That tradition was brought over to the United States, but it would take a while before it would take hold. You know, Halloween was a very different kind of celebration in the 1900s.
Talk about what it was like in the early 1900s, before trick-or-treating became an accepted part of Halloween. How was it celebrated?
Well, it was celebrated as a very, very public festival. Think almost along the lines of Mardi Gras. There was partying in the streets. There was confetti. There were huge parades. Civic associations held parties where they would have candy and treats handed out. It was also one of the reasons they made it such a public event was because in the late 1800s, before it had really taken off, it was celebrated as strictly an evening of pranks by boys. One of the things that I sort of found that was interesting is one of the biggest problems was gates being removed from fences, taken off the hinges, and then set aside. And they would take beans and pelt people with beans. Using slingshots and so forth. So you know, the local government sort of realized we've got to do something to get this under control.
We've got to get this bean shooting
this
thing.
Bean shooting thing. And they decide they're going to have these big costume parades in the city and really start to take a more active role in creating a sanctioned day and time and place for Halloween. So that's really where you start to see this idea of the city stepping in and say, Halloween will be on this night at these hours. And that lays the groundwork for trick-or-treating. That lays the groundwork for it. So it gets taken out of this, you know, these public clubs, these civic associations, and begins to do something. Instead of playing pranks on individual homes, you're given an option now. We can either trick you or you can give us a treat.
Placate us with candy. We'll leave you alone.
In the 1920s, that's really when it took off, that the pranks began to die down and they realized, well, you know what? We can, you know, bribe these kids to leave us alone. And so they started handing out candy in the homes.
You know, it's funny because I was talking to my aunt who grew up near Philadelphia. And during the late 20s, 30s, she remembers when trick-or-treating was a new thing, which is really hard to wrap your mind around that. But she remembered the first year they did it in the Philadelphia area and saying to her friend, yeah, I think we'll try this new trick-or-treating thing. And they didn't like it as much as the old stuff because they thought it was boring just to go to somebody's house and sit there and accept their candy corns, which is what she said was the first candy we ever handed to her trick-or-treating.
You know what? If you look to the early 1900s, 1910, like in the Post-Gazette, there were recipes for how to make popcorn balls, which is another thing still to this day associated with Halloween.
Right.
But the things that were associated with
Halloween. You got those, right?
I got those all the time. Those and mallow cups were the ones we sort of dreaded. But it's interesting because Halloween was very much this public festival, but it also was a food festival. And there was an official meat to Halloween in the United States, and that was possum. If you can imagine such a thing.
Where was that tradition?
It was throughout all of the South, and then it spread. It spread and spread throughout the United States that people were considering possum what is the official meal for Halloween.
Sounds like what you'd get when you knocked on the door of the Beverly Hillbillies.
Yeah, absolutely.
What was Halloween like in Pittsburgh 100 years ago?
You know, in Pittsburgh, it was really quite a big deal. Thousands and thousands of people would parade downtown. And it was described that there was a one-inch layer of confetti on the entire street parade route downtown. It was so celebrated and so much a part of those festivities. And one of the things that sort of you see when you look back at that history is there was a lot of gender bending happening. It was common for men to dress as women and women to dress as men, which was very controversial at that time. And women who dressed like men would be arrested all the way up to 1912.
Why were the women being singled out?
Because this was during the height of this suffragette movement in Pittsburgh. You were seeing a lot more women. Women were still forbidden from entering pubs. And even once they laxed the rules on women dressing up as men on Halloween, you still would be arrested if you attempted to disguise yourself and enter a pub on Halloween. So it was a really interesting time, and there were some political connotations to this Halloween parades and festivals.
We're talking with our culture contributor, Joe Wose, about the history of Halloween around the world and especially here in Pittsburgh. And sure enough, Joe, Zillow recently ranked Pittsburgh as the 12th best city to trick-or-treat in. What makes a great trick-or-treat neighborhood?
I grew up in the 70s in Braddock, which was not a good trick-or-treat neighborhood. We would actually go to other neighborhoods, maybe in North Braddock. Some of the neighborhoods there were really great. If we really, really could take the time, we would go over to Swissville and Swisshelm Park, which had the best trick-or-treating. First and foremost is safety. You know, parents look for a safe place for their kids, a neighborhood where they feel like they can go door-to-door. The other thing is the best candy. If a neighborhood, you got the neighbors that are, you know, more affluent neighbors, they're handing out those full-size Hershey candy bars and not those little bitty tiny things. We had a neighbor who was just awful. She was running for political office and would hand out political flyers. And I still see that.
Oh, my goodness.
And some years she would tape a penny to it because the kids stopped going to see her.
But no candy? Just the flyers?
No candy, just flyers. But that's also an outcrop of the 70s and 80s. There was a panic associated with, you know, candy, that there was, you know, news medias of razor blades and candy and all these horrible things. So people got away from handing out candy for a while, especially in the 80s. And you saw this rise of them handing out toys or comics or little trinkets. Thankfully, now we're back to candy.
How important is Halloween to the economy today?
Number two behind Christmas. It is huge. Think of all the things you can buy and prep for Halloween. Now, the nice thing about Halloween is it's designed very much that even those in lower income brackets can celebrate this. We think of Christmas as being an extremely expensive holiday. You have to buy gifts for everybody. And But Halloween, put together a costume, go out door-to-door and get free candy. But there is a huge industry around the costumes, around the candy, around the decorations, to the point where it is now a $7 billion industry every Halloween. That's a huge influx coming into those pockets. It's really a big time of year for our economy.
How much does Devil's Night add to the economy? Where did Devil's Night come from?
Devil's Night has been around since, this All Hallows Eve, this when they, Christianized it. You had this day, where you would honor the saints and those who have passed. Even when I was a kid, you would dress up as a saint because I went to a Catholic school. And this was a little bit of that old rebellion against it. This was that, we're going to maintain this sort of, prankster side of it.
So this is the night before Halloween.
This is the night before Halloween. As Halloween became co-opted as this very sanctioned, government at this time, we do this. And, we go to church that morning. The night before, as the saints and ghosts and everything were sort of coming back up, that became a time of pranking. And there were really great pranks. And this dates all the way back to, the 1800s when you would go out and play pranks on people.
And did this happen organically or was there a movement, organized?
It happened very organically among young boys. And it became a big problem. There were a lot of things happening in the community, and some of them got more and more out of hand. It got more and more dangerous as it became a night not of pranking but of law breaking. It became this thing of how many laws can we break in a single night, specifically among young teens during the early 1900s. And that carried through all the way up to recent times, this idea of going out and pranking people and breaking some, minor laws. But it still happens. It's not as big as it used to be. It's not that sort of running rampant, teens running through the streets, committing graffiti and breaking things. It's become more about throwing eggs and teepeeing someone's house with toilet paper.
So if people hand out the good candy, they'll avoid the pranks?
I think that's the tradition is every year the good houses and you make sure not to TP those.
That's the lesson we take from this. Our pop culture contributor, Joe Woes, joining us here on Essential Pittsburgh. Joe, as always, great thanks.
Thanks for having me.
More Essential Pittsburgh coming up. This is 90.5 WESA.